Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio with hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use always. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for January the 5th in the year of our Lord 2015. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founders. It's incredibly simple. We use the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America, as our guide. We call it the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land. Welcome to the broadcast. We believe in the checks and balances of our founders, ladies and gentlemen. That is the solution. To use the supreme law of the land, the checks and balances that our founders wisely put in place to restore the republic. And it'll work if everybody gets involved and has the guts to stand up. But remember, when the founders were asked what kind of government you have, they said a republic, if you can keep it. Well, it's all about trying to keep it, ladies and gentlemen, and we never focus on revolution, but always restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome, indeed, to the broadcast. Hope you're all doing absolutely marvelous. This half hour of Liberty Roundtable Live is brought to you in part by TetonSports.com and FreezeDryGuy.com, and also brought to you by GiveMeLibertyFund.com. If you want a win-win-win situation for patriots, GiveMeLibertyFund.com. We need your support. And I know a lot of people for the Give Me Liberty Fund have basically kind of said, Sam, you guys haven't been funding too many things lately. It's been several months. And my response is, I know, we're letting the kitty grow a little bit because we've got some things we really want to fund in 2015 that take a lot more money than members we have. And so if the money kind of builds, then we can get a lot of those things done. So we'll get to that. Thanks so much for your involvement, and thanks so much for all you do. If you want a win-win-win-win situation for patriots, Give Me Liberty Fund. .com. Quick recap of Friday's broadcast, then we'll launch into the news the networks refuse to use for today. We've started now. We've taken the Tech Watch radio program. That used to be a Saturday weekend program that I used to do with a buddy named Jay Harrison, technology show on the weekends. We've now dropped that show. But what I've done is I've taken the Tech Watch radio hour that we used to do, and I've molded it into Liberty Roundtable. So every Friday, first hour, will be a technology hour. We'll discuss all things relating to tech. So the Tech Watch, we keep an eye on tech so you don't have to, first hour, Fridays. Google knows you drank too much last night, we covered. That's the headline, but it isn't true because I don't drink. So Google thinks it knows, and that's the concern is you have these big computer systems these days assuming things that may or may not be correct, gathering data that may or may not be appropriate for them to gather. And what you have is Big Brother. Not necessarily just the government. You know, 1984 talked about the government being Big Brother, but now Big Brother is everybody. Big corporations in bed with government, in bed with who knows who. Everybody wants your information. All so they can manipulate it to control you and use it to make a profit. And at some point, you got to start to back away from that information overload, folks. And the more we do business with the good guys, the small companies, the better off we are. It's true. Take your parents to work day. You ever heard of that? No, I know it's take your kids to work day, but this is take your parents to work day. See, the problem is parents today don't even know what their adult children do for a living. It's so complicated and so high tech, and man, grandma and grandpa don't even have a clue. But if you take your parents to work day, they claim that, hey, mom and dad can actually get an idea and have some respect for what you do. That's pretty nifty, huh? 50% of occupations, they claim, will no longer exist in 2025. That's a new report that came out, and Sam Bushman absolutely debunks that report. I don't believe it. They say workspaces with rows of desks will become completely redundant, not because they are not fit for purpose, but because that purpose no longer exists. See, I don't buy it at all. Okay, I think they've got a point that things are changing, but things take a lot longer to change than people think they do. Okay, I remember when the touchtone phone came out in the early 70s kind of a thing. And I'm telling you right now, or at least I can't say they came out in the early 70s. I first saw one in the early 70s, right? Somebody might say, well, they came out 10 years before that. Who knows? But my point is, we are then talking about, I remember being in a horse barn with the first touchtone phone I've seen. And I remember sitting there and going, man, this thing's really neat. And someone said, yeah, pretty soon they'll have screens on them so you can, like, see each other and do video phones. Well, now FaceTime and some of those things are ubiquitous. We can do them now. What, 50 years later? Almost? But yet, at the same time, most phone calls still aren't with video, right? So things take a lot longer to come to fruition. Remember, do you know when the internet was available to the public? Do you guys know? 1991. 2001, 2011. We're talking 25 years ago. And there's still tons of people that aren't on the internet. There's still lots of issues to work out with how much connectivity people even have. My connection's not fast enough, and I've got 75 megabits down and 15 megabits up, and that still ain't enough, baby. So I don't buy that it'll happen near as quick as they think it will. Anyway, they say research now confirms that streaming kills downloads of music sales. So the big debate before was, well, man, CDs are dead. Everybody's going to download music. Well, now it's already disrupted again. Download music? Now people don't want to download it. They just want to stream it. Why download it? Why store a copy on my precious storage space that I don't have? Just leave that sucker in the cloud and give me access to it anytime, anywhere, baby. See, things change so fast that by 2020, they'll have a totally different vision, won't they? iPhone gets new Microsoft apps. That's good news. We also talked about Got Milk. Just text your fridge and ask. Sounds pretty neat. The year of 2015 and the CES, which is a consumer electronics show, happening in Vegas this week. And the big push is everything will be connected. Your fridge, your everything. The only problem is, next headline says, hey, fridges may be next for hackers. So get a internet-connected fridge, a remote-controlled fridge, well, or a thermostat. It could be hacked just as soon as you get one, so be very careful indeed. Maybe the connected home is a little too early for its time, huh? By the way, we've been talking about a connected home for literally decades, too. Just saying. But the new apps, they say, will let you take a picture of what's in your fridge, and then when you want to see if you have milk or whatever you got, you can look at the picture. Pretty neat, huh? Unless you get hacked. Cybersecurity groups are now using what they call, quote, fake computers to track and trap hackers. And I don't believe they're fake computers at all. That's kind of a misnomer of terms. They're not fake computers. The reality is, ladies and gentlemen, they're real computers, but they're fake in that they don't do exactly what the hacker thinks. It's not a normal computer. It's designed to create a honeypot or a trap for the hacker. And so they're keeping track of all kinds of stats and eventually turning the tables on the hackers, what these, quote, fake computers are doing. Really what they are is they're unique computers designed to turn the tables on the hacker, okay? Anyway, there's a rise of a new giant. It's a new cell phone company maker that we don't even know about here, folks. But it's called Xiaomi. Is that how you say it? X-I-A-O-M-I. Xiaomi? I don't know. Anyway, it took the number one position in China. It's the world's third largest cell phone maker, and they're growing big time. Anyway, that was our technology hour. It was a little bit of a rough hour because, hey, we're changing so many parameters of the show that it got a little bit of a rocky start. But nevertheless, expect Tech Watch Radio to rock and be the first hour on Fridays, the Tech Watch Radio segment of Liberty Roundtable Live. That was 1 hour brought to you by FreezeDryGuy.com. Second hour brought to you by TetonSports.com. An education-crazy South Korea. They say top teachers are becoming millionaires. And Kurt's talking about disruptive technology once again, where there's so many changes in technology that it's beyond imagination. And what's happening is the best teachers are starting to, with distance learning, be able to teach anybody around the world that they want to. And as a result, they're charging very little for their classes, but they're teaching so many people, it turns out to be big bucks for the top teachers. And that's a trend that Sam and Kurt support. Let's just get them in the private sector. Let the best of the best creep to the top. And let's make education cheaper and make it better. In fact, the education department started to see the writing on the wall. We should have abolished that a long time ago. Maybe the Republicans will get that done now. Time will tell. However, the education department launches a $3 million evaluation of Khan Academy. So they put $3 million bucks in to evaluate Khan Academy. And what they could have done is save their $3 million, give me a couple of hundred grand, and I could write up a summary for them. It's fantastic. It's going to change the world. Got it? But no, they'll spend $3 million and then come back with some convoluted who knows what, all right? We talked about the flip learning model of education. It normally was that you go, listen to the teacher for a lecture, go home and struggle with doing the work, right? Now, the flip model of education says that's bogus. Watch the lecture at home. You don't interact with the teacher anyway. Just watch that sucker at home or wherever you are. Then go into class, and the teacher can sit there while you work on your work and with incredible detailed software, find who's having trouble and walk over and say, hey, I see you've been on problem 9 for a little while. Do you need some help, buddy? And the flip education is really taken off, and I think it's about time. Thank the heavens for that. They say murders dropped to a record low, but officers aren't celebrating. Yeah, because the folks in the crosshairs now, sad to say, with Barack and Eric Holder and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and all the race-baiting racists, the cops are now in the crosshairs. I think it's a tragedy, ladies and gentlemen. Are sometimes the cops using excessive force? Yes. Does it need to stop? Without question. But destroying the very fabric of our society is not the solution. You got it? All right, we listened to an incredible video. It was the audio track of Bill Whittle. He talked about Ferguson and the real race war. He did a great job, too, by the way. It's primarily black-on-black crime. And then we talked about Sean Bergen and many others have coming out and saying, and we completely agree, look, what we need is fathers and mothers in homes. What we need is intact society. What we need is leaders that don't just blame the white man or blame everybody else, but leaders that truly have accomplished something. Jesse Lee Peterson comes to mind. Isola Foster comes to mind. David A. Clark Jr. comes to mind. We can think of many black leaders that come to mind. Ben Carson comes to mind. Anyway, I digress. But the point is, let's have real leaders that empower their people, huh? Americans saved $14 billion as gas prices fell in 2014. That's why I say that's good news. That money, that $14 billion in the hands of the American people's pockets, not in the hands of government or bigwig executives. Thank heavens for that. We need more of it. I guess a 95-year-old billionaire and a 39-year-old GoPro founder are two of the top givers in 2014. They also say a miracle saves family as a car hits a semi on I-15 freeway. And man, what a blessing it was. They were all spared. Great news. It's a good reminder for all motorists to slow down in the winter and be aware that black ice might exist on cold days. Even though the roads look clear or just wet, be careful. You don't know, and you better slow down. It was the week before Christmas, and Kurt Crosby was in his car. You'll have to listen to last week's broadcast to finish up with that one, huh? All right, thanks for being alongside for the ride. That's a recap of the broadcast that took place just Friday at LibertyRoundtable.com and on your Roku player. You want to turn your phone into a radio and listen live? Simply sit back, smile, and dial 712-432-5339. That's 712-432-5339. Without further ado, our guest today, Mr. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable, sir.
Thanks for having me, Sam and Kurt. Good to be back.
Did you have a marvelous Christmas and a Happy New Year?
Sure did. I have to tell you, we went down to enjoy some of the beaches in Mexico.
Wow.
Have you ever been down to Mazatlan?
I have never been.
Well,
I'm not rich like Lowell, man. I gotta, you know.
Yeah, for between $1,000 and $2,000, basically, we just drive down to Mexico and enjoyed Christmas down there. It was a cheap way to spend a couple of weeks. But the reason I mention that is I have to tell you something happened down there. You know, the Tonka trucks were really big this year among our adolescents. You know, I go down with a group. There's a big group down. So I'm talking, you know, dozens of families go down there, and so Tonka trucks were a hit. But if you're 5 years old and or 10 years old, whatever, you know, have a Tonka truck, then you were the man on the beach, you know.
I hear that. Okay.
Band rounding or Tonka truck and water and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's almost like being a member of Congress when you get older or something.
That's right, status symbol. They would have Tonka truck races down in between the rows of cars and RV park where we stayed there. But one young man, he's like a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, he was checking registration of all the other Tonka truck owners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. He said, now, you know, basically they were lined up, and he was letting them pass if they were registered, and he was not letting them pass if they weren't registered. And
did some people get belligerent and revolt and stuff?
And to be registered, basically, you had to have a palm tree leaf under the cab of your Tonka truck.
There you go.
Or in the bed, you know. And if you didn't have that palm leaf or whatever, then you had to go find one. And once you found one and put it there, then you were registered and you could pass. past this point and join the Tonka truck races. So I'm just here to tell you that I looked at that and I thought, my, how children model what they see adults do.
Yeah, and how wrong-headed it really is.
Yeah, pretty, slap in the face wake-up call. You know, it's amazing. These are just, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. They know exactly what's going on, you know, in the big, bad world of adults. And they see what's happening. And
but it also goes to show that, you know what, and this is the reason that, in my opinion, the complete anarchist or extreme libertarian view doesn't work is that, you know, as good-hearted as we wish everybody was, there is a vacuum of power. And if you don't have enough force to hold on to that and maintain a certain amount of liberty and autonomy and freedom, in other words, if you don't hold on to that balance, something with greater force will take over. And so that's why I believe that the United States form of government is genius, because it strikes a moral balance to make sure that the real goal of government is to make sure that that vacuum doesn't get filled with a more tyrannical force. And, you know, you say, well, Sam, it's always sliding towards a more tyrannical force every day. My response is, yeah, because of the immorality and the lack of interest by the citizenry, the apathy, no question. But nevertheless, the whole purpose of the United States government, the whole way that the Constitution was written, was our wise founders looked at this idea and said, hey, if we have no government, which is what we'd prefer, government's a necessary evil, then we're going to have this somebody else control and take power, a greater force is going to come in. And so we need enough force to stop that. And how do we get enough force to stop that, but not too much force? And the answer is they came up with the Constitution with a series of checks and balances. Is it perfect? No. Is it brilliant? Absolutely. Is it inspired? Without question. And can it restore proper role of government today? And the answer is only if we use it. I started out and said the founders claimed you have a republic if you can keep it. Again, it's all about can we use those checks and balances, those levers, if you will, to roll back that tyranny, to roll back that force, but to have enough balance to make sure that it's not toppled by a greater force. What do you think of that summary, Lowell?
Well, that's an excellent summary, and I'm just going to drive home the point you made, which is that their system was a division of power. It wasn't the centralization of power. The genius of the constitutional framework of our U.S. government was the division of power. It's separated. It has the checks and balances. And perhaps the most important check of all was that held by the state, who confederated, basically, you know, joined into a union voluntarily, they accepted the responsibility to stop the encroachment of the central authority if it ever exceeded its constitutional limits. And that was well understood for the first 75 years of the country's history. And then there was a second founding that seemed to occur in the 1860s, 1850s, 1840s, when the Whig Party came along and they wanted to centralize power. And the hallmark of Lincoln's administration really is that centralization of power. There was a huge change in the projection of our country.
Yeah, it was a whole way of thinking of who had the primary control and focus and sovereignty, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. I'm just reading a book. I'm surprised I haven't read it before, but it's called The Real Lincoln by Thomas DiLorenzo. I highly recommend that book to all of us.
And by the way, we'll have you back on after you finish the book. We'll drill into the details, but let me just quickly summarize. I have not read the book, but I understand a lot of the principles, and a lot of people hate Lincoln. They think, hey, he was just a thug. Him and Alexander Hamilton just wanted to control everybody, and I don't really believe that to be true. Personally, I believe that the United States lost a lot of its sovereignty, and the balance of power changed, not necessarily because Lincoln was a thug. In fact, I think it was against his will that it went down the way that it did. However, when you have a group enslave another, number one. Now, I know they say it wasn't about slavery, and I get that it was not about slavery. It was about states' rights to a great degree. But when you have one group enslave another, number one. Number two, when we punish a whole group of religious people to the point of extermination. Okay, Governor Boggs in Missouri said, let's exterminate the Mormons. Shoot them on sight, men, women, children, everyone. Okay, And you do that to a people when the whole purpose of the United States government was created for religious liberty purposes. You know, you're going to get a punishment from the Almighty. Nations are judged immediately for their abuses. And so I think that the carnage and the loss of authority and sovereignty directly related to the wickedness of the people. And you can say that I'm crazy, but I'm convinced those things, you cannot do that with impunity. You cannot do that and ignore the consequences. Same thing with the abortion issue that we have today. I'm telling you right now, we're going to pay. And we're going to pay in short order for this. And it's a horrible thing, but I'm telling you, I'm convinced that we blame it wrongfully on Lincoln.
Well, it started long before Lincoln came along. The Tariff of Abominations of 1828, I believe, was the seed which planted and developed into the war between the states. And we can go into that a lot more later, but yeah, it was not Lincoln's fault. It was Congress's fault. There was a lot of factors going into it, but absolutely, it's a very fascinating history, and it's a history that we don't get in the public schools.
You're right about that. And the big takeaway in my mind is this. You know, everybody wants to take one side of the North or the other side of the South. And in my opinion, you can't do that. The North had a lot of valid points. The South had a lot of valid points. And really, Lincoln was at least smart enough to keep the country together. And you know what? Even though it wasn't perfect, and even though we lost a lot of liberty due to wickedness of the people, when the people obey God's laws, they're protected. And when they don't, war and destruction and the loss of freedom is the result. But what I'm getting at is, Lincoln at least kept the country together. And I believe because of that, this nation shall endure. And I believe he was inspired, actually.
Well, and the another great takeaway is that the nation became great because it was a confederation of states unified in a common purpose by the bounds and the bands, I guess, of the Constitution. And because they observed the framework of the Constitution for a number of decades, they flourished, they blossomed. You know, our country became the strongest in the world, basically, because of adhering to that framework. And for the past 100 years, at least, we have failed to do that, and we have seen a huge demise, not only in the morality of the people, but in the strength of the character of our country. And you know, our foreign policy has gone south. Our domestic policies have gone south, and it all stems from the fact that we have failed to adhere to the framework established by the founders in the Constitution.
But we are doing some things, and we got to have credit for the things we are doing. In fact, one of the checks and balances indeed is working. We basically gave a landslide decision to say, hey, Democrats, you blamed Republicans for everything forever, but you're do nothing. Let's now have Republicans take a stab at this thing and see what they can do. Now, how many Republicans in the House did we get, or what was the sea change in both?
Well, the House was already quite Republican. It stayed that way. In the Senate, of course, we had a Democrat.
But hold on, how many changed in the House?
I don't know how many in the House. There are nine seats, Democrat seats in the Senate that were unseated. And so in the Senate, U.S. Senate, we have a 50, the Republicans have a 54-46 majority.
All right, hold on. We'll get into that in a second, but I find it fascinating how we say that Congress has a very low approval rating, but yet not much change, really. Let's talk about it. Liberty Roundtable Live. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like their green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 Moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, I'm still trying to find out how many new members of the House there are. Again, it's, quote, swearing in week. They're all going to go back and abuse us some more. And it's a kind of a tragedy to see. I don't know how many members of the House, but here's my point. I kind of mentioned right at the end of the last segment there that, you know what, on one hand, you know, we are grateful for the change. And for the opportunity that may provide, if we the people back principled ideas, and we really get involved, we can really make a sea change here. And we've got a good start. One of the checks and balances was used effectively, but not effectively enough. There's 435 members of the House that could be replaced every single time. And I guarantee you that we didn't replace more than 43 of them, did we?
According to Stripes.com, we got 58 freshmen that are coming in.
Right, so
that's 43 Republicans and 15 Democrats that are brand new.
So we changed 10%, about 15%. Is that right then?
Yeah, I guess that's close. 45 would be... 43 would be the 10%, yep. And there's 15 Democrats.
Well, because you'd have to have 22, whatever, right? And we had 59, so it's very close, okay? More like 13%, something like that. And so for Congress having such a low approval rating, and we only replaced 13, 14% of them, and that's considered an incredible win, an incredible landslide for an agenda to more conservative views, okay. But when you really take how many registered voters there are, then you take the dismal amount that really literally vote, and then from that you take that only, 13, 14% of them have been replaced in a landslide, quote, victory, supposedly. That's pretty telling. And in the Senate, it's worse. What, 9 new senators, lol?
Yeah.
That's not even 10%, folks. So if we say the Senate's dismal, we don't even have a 10% change rating, right? Now you could say, well, you couldn't replace all of them, Sam, right? Because it's every 2 years, you can only replace a third.
Right.
So in that sense, you replaced 9 out of 33. And so you could say, well, man, that's pretty good. That's like 30%. Not if you say the approval rating is down to 10%.
There's 13 new senators. I guess some of them are Democrats, I assume.
I see.
But it doesn't give you the numbers, but 13
new
ones.
All right, so 13
ones.
Of 33 potentials. Again, that's better by far. But the numbers are smaller, so it's easier to show a better percentage the smaller the numbers. In other words, if there's only 5 senators and you replace 2 of them, you'd be like, man, we replaced 40%. It's incredible. But what I'm saying is for their low approval rating of, under 10%, everybody claims now it's been the most dismal approval rating ever and do nothing Congress and everybody's complete. That's sure not that big of a seat change. We sure could have replaced a lot more of them than that.
Yeah, the I guess in the House, Wikipedia is saying it's the largest Republican majority since 1928.
All right, so then here's then the writing that I wrote about this whole point to start us off here. Lowell emailed me and said, we got to talk about the Fed. And so the headline says, Republicans now have a 54-46 majority in the Senate. Will they deliver on out of the Fed? Question mark. What do you say, Lowell?
Well, that's a great question. You know, Harry Reid, the Democratic majority leader, refused to allow that bill to be, you know, come to the floor for a vote. And there weren't enough senators to force it to onto the floor. You know, if a majority of the House wants to vote on it, they can certainly do it, regardless of what the majority leader says. But in this case, they didn't have a majority. We only have probably 30 co-sponsors on that out-of-the-Fed bill in the last Congress. So it's now up to Mitch McConnell, I guess. He's the majority party leader in the Senate, and he's... You know, he and Rand, they both come from the state of Kentucky, and Rand is the sponsor of all of the Fed bill in the previous session of Congress. So, you know, it suggests that this session, this upcoming session, either in 2015 or 2016, we will get a vote finally on all of the Fed in both the House and the Senate.
And the point is, we've never had a better opportunity to, one, get a vote, and two, to have the vote go our way.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I expect it to pass the House again. I don't know that it would pass the Senate, but it would certainly put all the senators on record. You know, I'm pretty sure it'll come up for a vote, even though, you know, there might not be 50 senators who vote for it. At least they'll be on record as either standing for transparency or opposing transparency in our government, monetary policy.
Yeah, and if we don't have 50 vote for it, though, when you consider there's already 54 Republican senators, and even if four defect, you'd still have some Democrats that are, or what do they call those, the yellow dog Democrats, the fiscally responsible ones. A few of those might jump aboard, too. So it would take a chunk, I mean, six or seven Republicans to defect to make it fail. And if that were the case, that's a significant number. I mean, that's more than 10% selling us out. And so it'll really be a telltale sign of, and this is your whole point, you know, if we get the House to pass it, great. But the key is we need to put those senators on record and then punish them come next election.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. While we're on this topic, I do want to say thank you to all the people, all the citizens throughout the country who made telephone calls and talked with their congressmen, especially their senators, about auditing the Fed, working for transparency and monetary fiscal policy. You know, although we didn't get her done in 2014. We will certainly have a chance to get her done in 2015 and 16, and so let's reload, so to speak, and get ready and make sure that it happens in the upcoming year.
But in the defense of the effort, though, hey, man, I've been at commentator and et cetera, talk show host on politics for a long time. In the first 15 years, I never saw one of these bills even come up for discussion or vote. Now it's continually a hot topic, and that alone is incredible news as we continue to work towards education and work towards solutions and work towards pushing this, in my opinion, effort for transparency along. And it takes a lot of work, guys. You can't change it overnight, Lowell.
That's exactly right. And this particular issue is one that doesn't get a lot of, notoriety, because a lot of people don't realize what an important issue this is. But, see, this is the key issue. If a government cannot issue paper money, then they cannot grow and they cannot expand. They lose their power to entitlement. They lose their power to go on foreign war excursion. The warfare state, the welfare state, they collapse. You know, they can't build those a warfare state or a welfare state if they can't print their own money. So we're just very nibbling at the edges of this huge monstrosity, I guess, of government, and we aren't even close to where we want to be, but we are certainly in the right direction. We're making progress. We're nibbling at the edges, and one of these days it will come crumbling down, and hopefully, I pray that we'll get back to an age where the government is restricted in its growth and reach by the amount species that they can collect from the citizenry, you know, in the form of levies, duties, taxes, imposts, and so forth, that would be a great day. That would be truly a government that's not intrusive into the lives of the citizenry.
There you have it, Kurt. Do you want to chime in and toss your tidbits in? I think this is a worthy push.
Well, yeah, I agree. And, Lowell's always showing us the way forward as to, how to make things happen. He suggests and reminds us that we've got to continually be, banging on the turret or giving them a call at your congressman and your senator's offices. They need to know your name. You need to be polite, that kind of thing, but they need to make sure that they know who you are and that you're willing to participate in this, great cause of liberty. It's a audience participation program, not a sit back and wait and see what happens program.
Well, and one of the things that, at least for Liberty Roundtable, we try to accomplish is, hey, we try to be your, I don't know what you call it, filter. In other words, there's so much information to come in your way, folks, you'll never keep up. The question is, how do you find out what should percolate to the top? How do you find out what should be the important issues? And that's why the broadcast is called Liberty Roundtable, because our goal is to bring to you the people who are on, like, the cutting edge of what's really happening and what we're doing and what we can do and where we can make a difference and what the solutions are and et cetera, et cetera. And so campaignforliberty.org, Lowell Nelson, hey, if you want to know what good is happening in the Republican Party, that's where you're going to find it. Now, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I'd love a good Democrat to come to the table and tell us what's happening in that. I guess David A. Clark Jr. Would be a good example to find out what's happening there. And so, again, the point for us is we want to really bring to your attention the most important issues. If it's guns or, your Second Amendment, what's happening there? What do you got to be aware of? What do you got to keep a handle on? What do you got to do? Oh, our buddy Larry Pratt, gunowners.org, gets it done. You want to find out about sheriffs and peace officers and the police and what's happening there? Hey, man, Richard Mack, CSPOA.org. So we bring to you in the roundtable, in my opinion, I don't want to call it a filter that we're trying to block anything from you, but what we're trying to do is let percolate to the top that which you can be involved in, that which has solutions behind it, that which has a positive viewpoint and an answer. So we're saying, hey, the Republicans have this great majority. Now, that's fantastic. We give them credit. Now, let's see what they can do with it. But now it comes back to you backing them, you helping them accomplish that goal. And the biggest thing they need is your support. Whether you're Republican or not, doesn't make any difference. The fact is, they're there, and they need your support. You need to back them on the right principles. And so Lowell is gallivanting around the state of Utah this month. Utah Campaign for Liberty County meetings are going to be held all over the state in January, Lowell.
Yes. Yes, Cache County is the first Wednesday. So if you live in or around Cache County, Utah, they always have a meeting on the first Wednesday of the month in the historic courthouse in downtown Logan. If you live in or around Salt Lake County, which is the most populous county in Utah, we are meeting the second Wednesday of each month at the Golden Corral on 8800 South Redwood Road, second Wednesday. The Cache County meeting is at 6. The Salt Lake County meeting, you get there at 6:30 and eat a bite of food, and then the meeting starts at 7. And in Utah County, the second most populous county of Utah, the Campaign for Liberty meeting meets on the third Thursday of the month, which this month is January 15th. We meet at Boy Scout office at 7 p.m., third Thursday of the month. And so we invite anyone and everyone interested in the cause of liberty, wishing to get more involved, hoping to help push government back within constitutional bounds to come out, get involved. There is something you can do. I guarantee it. You come to a meeting and you walk away with two or three great assignments, things that you can do, and you get them done over the month, and you come back for another meeting. And it's very exciting to be involved either at the city level, the county level, the school district level. There are a lot of wonderful ways you can be involved in the Campaign for Liberty. You can even do book club. You can read books. You can talk about it. You can write editorials. You can talk to your congressman. So, yeah, there's myriad ways in which you can be involved and just joining together, coming to these meetings and seeing who else is involved and seeing what's happening is a shot in the arm. It's encouraging and you benefit, and others who come to these meetings see you and they benefit as well. So please come to a meeting. And if you don't have a meeting in your county, like if you live in St. George or in Cedar City or Santa Quinn or someplace else, then please call me, let me know, and we can help out. We can get meetings started in your area.
I think that's important. I think learning how the delegate system works, learning how the real system on the ground works, most people don't even know how that works, and learning that is a valuable skill, to say the least. Putting our people in place along the way. You know, everybody wants to just focus on President of the United States, but putting our people in place along the way is the key to success, because believe it or not, when you vote, you're only voting for what you've been given by the organizations on the ground for given candidates and or parties. And so you got to understand where the real issue starts. And if you want to make a difference, you got to be involved at the very start, not on the back end of, well, golly, they gave us Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush for 2016. I hate those guys. Well, you know what? You could have fought hard to make sure that it wasn't George Bush or Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush or who knows who at the helm. And that's kind of the point and the key. Now, you have some pretty good words for those who attend these schools of what they can accomplish and who they can become, Lowell.
Certainly. Anybody who attends a one-day, what we call a political leadership school, basically it's a boot camp for political activism, fantastic course, all-day course, 9 to 5, learn from the very best instructors in the country. They fly all over the country providing the information in our activist training course. If you have attended this course, then you know what I'm talking about. We learn what makes politicians tick, basically, and we learn how to persuade them to do what they should do, what they took an oath to do, which is to uphold the Constitution and to fight for individual liberty and constitutional government and free markets and so forth. I mean, that's what they said they would do, and we just learn how to hold their feet to the fire, basically, hold them accountable for the oath that they took. And so these one-day schools are pretty awesome. And
I like the phrase, pick a fight to have a purpose. It's not about the fight. It's about purpose. It's about principle. And then build a group to win the fight. I hate to say it, but you know what? There are those who want to destroy your freedom, folks, and they're the ones fighting with us. They're the ones that want to take away what's so precious. And so we stand up for a purpose. We stand up for a principle. We stand up for our wives, our children, our families, our freedoms. And so this is not about fighting, but it is about arming oneself. And I don't mean literally, but I mean educationally and morally. And it's about understanding how to build an organization, how to build a group, how to work together for solutions. And anybody who wants to come to the solution table is welcome, as long as they're willing to focus on the right solutions. Who determines the right solutions? Well, I'd simply say the supreme law is the starting point. Doesn't matter about my opinion or your opinion. Let's start with the law, shall we? And I kind of think that's the salient point here, Lowell.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you understand just tackle. The way I like to think of it, Sam, is just go. I mean, just go to a city council meeting or go to a county commission meeting. Go to a school board meeting. See what they're talking about. Go to several of these meetings. And get acquainted with the people, get acquainted with the issues they're grappling with, they're wrestling with. I guarantee that if you are not angry at your elected officials about something, then you simply are not paying attention.
Well, let's take this example right from the top. The Senate report on torture just came out. It chronicles the torture that Americans have engaged in, the American government or military has engaged in. And it doesn't cover all of it, but it certainly gives us an inkling that, you know what, we've used to have the moral high ground. Now we've melted down. Any torture is abhorrent. Both the Bush and the Obama administrations, that's interesting, both administrations have tried to justify torture, saying that it's essential to our national security. but I submit that torture is never justified, sir. It's a lie.
It's a terrible lie, Sam. Torture does not produce reliable information, number one. So even if it were justified, it produces bad information. But more than that, it is not justified, cannot be justified. It, in my opinion, it deepens the hatred that individuals harbor toward the U.S. and toward any administration that condones torture. You remember in the 2011-2012 presidential races, the presidential candidates for the Republican Party were asked how they felt about torture. And, you know, all the leading candidates, they said, yeah, it's okay. It's just sad, Sam, that and torture increases the likelihood that our U.S. soldiers particularly, and perhaps even citizens, journalists, and tourists perhaps, will be treated inhumanely when they encounter those folks who hate us or who resent our occupation of their country. So Middle Eastern folks who, we go over there, we occupy their country, they tell us to get out, they try to kick us out, and instead we capture and we torture them. All we're doing is deepening their hatred and their resentment of us. And so how do we expect to be treated if we ever get captured? If our soldiers, if our boys and our girls who are soldiering for our country get captured, no way are they going to be treated humanely. And that's a travesty. That's a huge travesty, in my opinion. And it's so sad that we don't treat human beings like human beings. There's more benefit to, you know, when you just talk to a prisoner in a conversation and ask him questions and so forth, you can get more information with the humane treatment of prisoners than you ever possibly could with inhumane treatment. No question.
All right, Kurt, you want to wrap up? What do you think, my friend? You think the Republicans are going to get it done, sir?
Well, I would love to say yes. You know, the problem, at least that I've seen when we look at track record, you know, guys like Mr. Boehner and McConnell just don't have much of a track record, even a recent track record since November, you know, really looks pretty dismal when you look at things like the Cromnibus bill and their vote on that, and then their the shenanigans that went on right when we were on Capitol Hill. And yet there are those who are, working to replace Speaker Boehner.
And we pray for them and hope, and I'm going to give you one of the replacement guys next hour. We got a breakdown on them. We did a bunch of research on them. We'll give that to you next hour. But the point is, look, we torture people, Kurt. Okay, I'm telling you right now, when we abort babies in America and murder the most innocent among us, when we torture those who we have in, quote, captivity, etc., I'm telling you, it does not bode well for that kind of a nation. We've lost the moral high ground. We need to reject torture. Both parties need to reject it. We need to stand and say, look, if you treat people with respect, people who hate America, especially when you have these terrorist groups that may not even be tied to a specific country per se, be evil elements around the world who hate America, they hate America because of what they've been taught. And if we put them in, if we capture them and we treat them with love and kindness and respect and dignity and say, listen, you know what? The reason we caught you is because of what you're doing to us. We had to, and we treat them with dignity and decency. Eventually, we could change the tide. And it'll be like, you know what? What I was taught about the Americans isn't true. They had me, what they get is more evil from us to the point of all it does is heighten the agenda, it seems to me. All it does is back what they've been taught. And we've got to stop it, Lowell. I'm telling you right now, we will reap the whirlwind as a nation. The Almighty will punish us. Nations are punished immediately. They don't have a soul. They can't go to the judgment bar of God later. And I'm telling you, if we continue to torture, continue to murder the most innocent among us, we will have nothing but trouble, sir.
Well, you're right, Sam, and it's sad. There's a movie that we saw just this weekend called Unbroken. We saw it Saturday night, my wife and I. And it's basically the story of a World War II prisoner of war held in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. And the movie focuses on the inhumanity to to Olympian Louis Zamperini. And I sort of I walked away from that show wishing that they had focused more on his life after prison camp, because that's when some of the most important lessons that can be learned from his experience are found. You know, after his experience in prison war camp, he sought not revenge, but he sought reconciliation. He forgave his captors. He actually met with every single one of his captors that he could meet with. There's only one Japanese gentleman, his last name is Watanabe, that refused to meet with him after the war. And so the Zamperini's approach was you know, a godly approach. It was a forgiving approach. And that was the answer that he says, you know, we shouldn't seek revenge. We should seek for forgiveness. And that, you know, I just...
And we shouldn't seek to force. We should seek to build relationships of trust. And that was what America did for literally decades and centuries, right?
Yes, by voluntarily allowing, you know, trade among nations, supporting, never getting into entangling alliances, you know, and trying to force people to do things. You cannot export liberty with a barrel of a gun. Ron Paul has said that over and over. You have to do it by example, and you entreat other nations and other countries to partake of the free market system, free trade, and so forth, and build themselves that way. You don't force liberty on anybody. It just doesn't work.
And you can't force confessions, or else you get bogus information under stress. The list goes on and on. You got 10 seconds. What do you think is going to happen with the Republicans taking control? This week's the swear-it-in week, lol.
Business as usual, Sam, unless you and I and all the rest of the citizens of America make a bigger halibut difference about the way things are going.
Godspeed, my friend. Thank you so much. Sam and Kurt, next hour, we got a whole lot of news the networks refuse to use to break down, so hang tight. We're ready to deliver. This is Liberty Roundtable Live. You want to turn your phone into a radio? Simple and free, anytime, anywhere. Simply smile and dial 712-432-5339. That's 712-432-5339. For Sam and Kurt, we declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and indeed will restore America, but we need your help. LibertyRoundtable.com. Will you do it? Hey, thanks.